Wait, you pegged a guy?
Yes, I have.
What? Awesome.
Yeah. I haven't gotten to peg a guy.
I thought you knew that.
No, I didn't know that. I'm super jealous.
Well, get on it.
Well, get on it.
You get on it.
Jeez. I feel like we could work this out right
now. I know, right? Come on.
If you're happy with the same old ways of dating,
if you enjoy sucking at communication,
and you have no desire to improve your romantic life, then our podcast might not be for you.
But if you want some out-of-the-box ideas to deepen your current relationships,
broaden your sexual horizons,
develop a better understanding of yourself,
or learn more about non-monogamy, then you've come to the right place. I'm Jace.
I'm Emily.
And I'm Dedeker.
And this is the Multiamory Podcast.
Songs I know I did. False and made a fall.
On this episode of the Multiamory Podcast, we are talking with Cooper S. Beckett, the host of the Life on the Swing Set podcast, and whose new book, Approaching the Swingularity, is out today. So you can go pick that up right now. With Cooper, we're going to talk about swingers resorts. We're going to talk about the crossover between the swinging world and the polyamorous world. And we're even going to talk a little bit about pegging. So stay tuned for all of that.
All of our minds got a little bit blown.
Yes.
I think each and every one of us.
And with that, let's get to the interview.
All right. So here we are with Cooper S. Beckett. Thank you so much for joining us today, Cooper.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
So, Cooper, I went back and checked, and we had you on our podcast way back in ancient history in episode 17 when we were small, innocent podcast babes.
Yeah, we were a wee podcast.
A wee podcast making its way in the world. And that was for your first book, Life on the Swing Set, which was kind of more of a memoir. It was kind of your collected, like, mostly autobiographical writings about your kind of transition through exploring the swinging community and exploring polyamory, things like that. If we fast forward to 2016, in episode 53, we reviewed your first novel, A Life Less Monogamous, and here you are today with a new book that's going to be coming out today. The day that this podcast release is the release day for the sequel to A Life Less Monogamous, Approaching the Swingularity. So, that's all your accolades that I know of, anyway.
I wanted to ask, is this actually your second novel, or have you written other novels that we are not aware of?
I have written and not published other novels.
Okay. Oh, that's awesome.
And, you know, it's funny. I was looking at some of the earlier things, like, because once you understand how to publish, it's like, well, what else can I publish? And I was looking at some of my earlier things, and it was definitely a less woke time. I'm no longer comfortable with some of my early plots.
Yeah, that's why we've been archiving some of our early episodes.
Oh, yeah, I've done that. I had a fight with Dylan, actually, about four episodes. The title was... Boys have penises, girls have vaginas.
I see.
Yes, yeah. They do.
It was a men and women cast where we'd ask the same questions to the different groups. Like, we had five guys, we had five. And it was a cool idea, but there were a lot of elements that made me uncomfortable about it. Mm-hmm. And the whole gender identity thing now, and using girls, you know, which I'm trying to stop doing. So those four just disappeared one day.
I understand.
Yeah, we just, like, for us, it's mostly embarrassment about our audio quality.
Yeah.
Speaking quality,
things like that, as well as, like, plenty of things like that sprinkled in of being less woke and less, less informed and not using the right terminology, things like that. Yeah. So.
Because reviews will still show up from year one criticizing something I said, you know?
Yeah. So to fill our listeners in on this book in particular, A Life Less Monogamous kind of overall, it tracked the story of Ryan and Jen, who were just opening up their relationship, like kind of just dipping their toes into the swinging world. And that contrasts to this new one, Approaching the Swingularity, which is set at a swingers resort, specifically. And it's so funny because Emily was like, wait, these are real?
I was just like, oh my God, there are actual resorts out there in the world where, like, people cater to this and, you know, they're used to it and all that. I had no idea. Now I know.
Well, I'm happy to help open your eyes.
Yeah, I appreciate
that. To the wonders of swing resorts.
So I feel like I know I've seen on your social media that, like, that, you know, the life on the swing set, people do a takeover of Desire, like maybe once a year or something like that. And it sounds like you have experience with swing resorts outside of that as well. What's been, like, your personal experience kind of entering, like, the world of actual resorts, you know, different from just going to play parties or just swapping with someone that you know, but, like, fully immersing yourself in this world?
Well, I can only speak to one resort, and that's Desire Resort in Cancun. I can only speak to that because once I went there, I never wanted to go anywhere else really at all. Like, my family keeps asking me to go on vacation to Disney World. It's like, but then like, I would have to. No, I can't. I just can't do it. So Desire, the first time I went with the Sex is Fun podcast. Are you familiar with them?
I'm familiar with that one. Yeah. Okay.
And they had a very small group, about 25 couples, and I went with them. And it was just this weird experience of feeling like you belong. It's the way I hear people describe Burning Man. Mm. You know, like you walk in here and suddenly it's like, well, this is exactly where I need to be for the rest of my life. You know?
Right. Mm.
And immediately after that trip, I thought, you know, in my standard fashion that I can do better. And decided to host my own. And so Swing Set hosted this past year was our fifth year.
Wow.
Right.
And our first takeover of the resort.
That's so
cool. We moved from the first trip, we had something like 30, then we moved to 50, then we moved, you know, and last year we had 111 couples with us.
Wow, that's so many
so
people.
So it was just only Swing Set
people.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that's incredible. Wow.
Yeah.
What's really amazing about it is, you know, the resorts, like a play party, it feeds on whom is there, you know.
So
you go to two play parties at a club one night and the next night, it's going to be two completely different experiences.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think it's something about the way we promote and what we talk about in our promotion, you know. We talk more about Doctor Who in our promotion of our swing resort thing than anyone
else.
Cool
people.
Yeah. So we're getting geeks.
Yeah.
And we talk a lot about queer people. We talk a lot about poly and you know, any level of interest in exploration sexually is welcome on our trip. And we overemphasize the bi guy thing because that's the only thing that will get bi guys to attend is to feel like it's a safe space to explore. So
that's
we've sort of created a sort of self-selection in who attends our trips.
Yeah. I was going to ask if there was any like vetting that happened between.
There isn't.
Okay.
But it makes sense because I think it's a similar thing to what we have in our Facebook-only patron group for our Patreon people is that the people who listen to you probably have enough in common with kind of your ideals and what you're putting out there.
And what you value.
And then the same with our people on Patreon. It's like if you're willing to actually put some money toward this or like go commit to going to a show or something, like you're going to have enough in common with it that you're...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just started giggling because I imagined like our patron group doing a takeover of a swing resort.
I would love that.
You should just all come with to art.
Right.
Yeah, we should just make it a big old massive like, swing set network style thing.
Last year we did a takeover for the first time, and that allowed us to change things at the resort. So it allowed us to really open up the theme nights, get rid of some of the more swingery themes. You know,
What counts as a swingery theme?
You know, like you see mansions and bunnies. You know, you see a sexy schoolgirl. It's like, well, that's all fun, but it's not creative at all.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So whereas on our theme night we had space cowboys. You know, we're doing. And you can still do the other shit, and that's fine. And when I say the other shit, I'm not judging.
Sure.
But we also were able to have the resort build dungeon equipment for us and actually had a dungeon takeover of the disco one night.
Oh, nice.
We partnered with Ending the Sexual Dark Age, another great podcast that's BDSM themed, and they came and co-hosted. And they'd never done this at the resort before. So they said, send us your plans for the St. Andrew's Cross or the flogging bench, and we will build them.
Wow.
God.
And so now the resort is...
Talk about customer service.
Yeah. Oh, I know. It's amazing. Well, when you do a takeover, really, there's no one to upset.
Yeah, that's true.
Right.
Everybody who comes with us knows what we're doing. Mm-hmm. So that's why last year had more boy kissing, I think, than the resort had ever seen before.
Lovely. Uh-huh.
You know, more cross-dressing than the resort had ever seen before.
That's nice. Great.
Because we create a safe space. And that's really what makes it amazing to me.
Yeah.
Is that I can walk in there and feel safe.
Nice. Yes. And
when I don't... And it happened once this past year because I don't know if you know, but there was an election in November.
Oh, yeah. I'd almost forgotten about it. He brought it back up.
Trust me, I never will.
So I won't dwell on it, but there was a real asshole on election night.
Mm.
And I had to make a call to protect the masses, you know, protect the large number of people who are crying at the bar versus his right to say whatever he wants, you know?
Yeah.
So that's a hard thing as a host and, you know, that's, but I feel it's what makes our trips safe.
Yeah. That's funny. Cause Jace was also at a play party on election night.
Yeah. That's so funny. You mentioned that we didn't have anyone, everyone was kind of on the same page politically at that particular one, but it was definitely the saddest play party.
that night there was a girl orgy, lady orgy, and they thought, what a great way to welcome our first female president.
Right.
And then they said that suddenly people started coming up the stairs to the hot tub crying.
Yeah.
And we knew. I'm gonna take us away from politics.
Yep.
Yeah, I'll
spend the time talking politics on that.
Well, so something that we had on our list to talk about later, but we wanted to get to now since you've already brought it up, is that crossover between poly and swinging.
Yes.
And it's something that, we were recently on the Dr. Susan Block show.
Oh, gosh.
And something that she actually was very complimentary about was how, as a poly podcast, that we're never, demonizing or saying anything bad about swinging.
Sure.
That it's just like, this is a different choice. You can do both. There is some crossover stuff like that. And I know that... a lot of our education about that crossover has partly come from you and what you do on your podcast. But I did want to bring it up because I have always kind of wondered at something like a swingers resort or something like that, if there might be a certain like fear when a poly group shows up. A certain fear of like, oh no, are they here to like take away our partners or not respect kind of the or not respect like the sanctity of this, primary relationship or something. I was just curious if that ever comes up as a
I think less and less as we took over more. I think there was definitely there's always a weird discomfort with the unknown, whether it's BDSM, whether it's poly.
Yeah.
And so I think early on when poly couples would come to the resort who also, if you go to this resort, you're probably also interested in casual sex.
Right.
Sure.
Probably. Yeah. Not necessarily, but probably. So if you're having casual sex, it doesn't really affect or enter into that situation that you are also, by the way, poly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you're on vacation. So the odds of wandering in and then meeting this long distance lover, though I have met quite a few people who are long distance lovers now. I think it's just, the people who comes with us know that nobody is going to try to steal their partner into the cabal of poly.
Cabal.
It's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. And so it's okay. But yeah, there's definitely in generalized swinging, there's definitely that fear of poly. And I understand it because I had it at the beginning too.
Mm-hmm.
Because, love seemed scary and complicated. And I think we'll all agree it is scary and complicated.
Yeah.
But sex seemed easy.
Mm-hmm.
And as I've moved along through my life, and even in the 2 years since I was on your show.
Yeah.
Now my partner and I are dating a third.
Oh,
and we have been for the last year, which is awesome. And we know how rare anniversaries can be in triads.
For sure.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So it's it's always a challenge and it's always a lot of communication. And I think swinging, I think, is opening up more, mostly because I think the younger crowd is homogenizing a little bit.
Sure.
So it's less I'm a swinger, I'm poly. It's more I'm open, which is really where we should be in the first place. You know, you can be open however you'd like. Swinger and poly are just easier ways to describe yourself. You know?
Sure.
Yeah. Actually, it's funny that you say that because I do feel that I get this sense of there's a little bit of like the old guard with the swinging community versus kind of the new generation.
The same is true with poly.
Well, yeah, definitely. Yeah. Of course. I mean, with almost everything, really. Because I feel like if I was going to sit down right now and just like Google like a sex party or a swinging club or whatever, that it's still, I'm probably still going to find the typical tired out like, you know, single ladies get in free, single men, it's $8,000, you know, no guy on guy action, you know, that's still there. However,
what's been really interesting is when I switched from swinger parties, to queer play parties, and I credit my friend Mr. Pent for that because he was having those with his friends. You know, and I was from the community of swinger parties where you invite couples, maybe some unicorns, if you know any, they are rare, and then people pair off. But once I went to one of his parties, it really opened my eyes on how much more fulfilling it can be when the group is queer, you know, and not everybody needs to be queer. It's more the feel of everything, you know, having trans people there, having gay people there. Right. And because gay people really don't go to swinger parties.
They
just don't. So it's made a huge difference in the way I look at things.
I was going to say that, but it's like, so if that's, I mean, that obviously those kind of habits or tendencies of the old guard swinging community are still there, but then I feel like on a personal level, any swinging or play party community that I've connected to is very much like this more new generation that is open to queer people and trans people and bisexual men and things like that. And I do really appreciate that in your book that you wrote in a lot of characters that were bisexual or trans or gay or lesbian or whatever, that there was this good representation of sexuality across the board.
So I had a question for you, and I don't know if you have an answer for it, but something I've been really curious about because of the play party group that I found a while ago that I've been to a few of their things is that I was definitely one of the only poly people there. That I, you know, I went with a girlfriend of mine at the time, and everyone was like, "Oh wow, like these guys are poly. You should ask them about that." As if that's like a wow crazy thing. I've never heard of this. Or, you know, I've heard of it, but I've never actually known a real one.
They exist in the world?
In the wild.
Yeah. What was interesting to me, though, is that no one ever used the word swinger. Like, that wasn't a term that anyone there used to describe themselves. And I was just curious if you've come across, like, a newer way that people identify. And these are people at this group mostly in their 20s and 30s. I wondered if there's some kind of new term or
my
like
hip term. I mean, you
I
said
think
open.
People are afraid of the term swinger, younger groups, because it's been, I mean, it's been very specific what swingers are in the world. I like the term swinger. I like the idea of taking it back, you know, from the scary, dangerous section that it became. I've noticed that people just they're charting their own course now. It's not about swinging or poly. It's about not monogamy.
Yeah.
Sure.
You know, because that's no longer as interesting. And I feel like I was looking at the rise of poly in the zeitgeist, you know, on magazine covers. And it seems to coincide with the financial collapse. And I think the reason that is because the financial collapse happened and people started living at home longer, meaning they weren't going to get married, they weren't getting their house. So if your course is interrupted, you're not on that track anymore, it gives you time to actually think about what it is you want. And when you really think about what you want, more and more people are thinking, well, maybe it isn't monogamy.
Yeah, definitely. That's a really interesting theory.
I hadn't considered that. Yeah, no,
I think that does make sense.
Yeah.
I have a very uninformed question for you.
Okay.
So I myself have only ever been to like swinging events, you know, and swinging spaces like play parties, but I've never been on a, went on a swinging cruise or been to a swinging resort, anything like that. And there's a scene in your book where there's a massage therapist who works for the resort who doles out some happy endings and it's very hot and very fun. But I started thinking, I was like, wait, the people who work at these resorts, like, do they get in on the action? Are they allowed to? Do they not? Do they, like, what can you tell me about the people who actually work at these kind of resorts?
Well, the first thing I'll tell you is they're amazing.
Okay.
I'm assuming they've seen it all.
I'm sure they've seen it all.
And, I mean, the people at Desire have the most uncanny ability to remember your name and your favorite drink across the years.
Wow.
Like, I will walk in, get a hug and my drink from the bartender on the beach when I arrive.
That's incredible.
So I don't know how they do that. Like, I seriously have no idea how this group of people almost universally is so conscious of the people on the resort. I will say I've heard very specifically they do not have sex with the patrons. I don't know that that's actually the case.
Yeah.
It's possible. I bet some do, but in general, they don't seem to. The party staff tends to get very, very, very friendly with the people they're dancing with.
Interesting.
The you know, that scene, the happy ending massage scene, I actually toned it down from the ridiculousness of what the massages are like at the resort.
Oh, really? Oh, wow. So that was a toned down version? My goodness.
Yeah, like the couple's massage actually can include assisted thrusting.
Okay. Interesting. So as in like the couple
sort of
will...
a butt massage
and
like the couple is having sex and their movement
massaged?
Is being facilitated by by the massage therapist.
Fascinating.
So I combine that with there's a woman who works outside the resort.
I see.
Whose name is Claudia.
Oh, okay.
And
got it.
Everybody for the last 25 years, everybody who goes and wants a good massage, they're like, no, you got to go see Claudia.
I see.
So the first time I was there, we went off resort to see Claudia, and it was the closest. You know, I'm not at all a spiritual or woo-woo person, but it was the closest to transcendence I've ever experienced.
For a long time now, we've been fans of AdamandEve.com for getting sex toys or lingerie or accessories, things like that. It's just a fantastic resource with a huge selection. And now, not only do we have a fantastic offer, but we also have a promo code that will work on AdamMale.com and EvesToys.com, which are their sites specifically for LGBTQ audiences. And our code is fantastic. It's 50% off of almost any item in the store and free discreet shipping when you use our code MULTI.
Yes, we love AdamandEve.com and have for years. They are our oldest and longest sponsor, and they just keep on giving great gifts to us and to our listeners. You can bring more pleasure and satisfaction into your bedroom by going to AdamandEve.com, AdamMale.com, or EvesToys.com and select any one item. It can be, you know, an adventurous new toy, or anything you desire, something fun, something sexy, whatever sounds good.
So just enter offer code MULTI at checkout and you'll get 50% off almost any item plus free shipping. That's MULTI, MULTI at AdamandEve.com, AdamMale.com, or EvesToys.com. This is an exclusive offer that is specific to this podcast and it's better than any offer that is currently available on their site. So again, use code MULTI to get you not just the 50% discount, but also the 100% free shipping. Code MULTI.
I'm on the website right now and looking up these just absolutely gorgeous pictures of actual Desire. And we did a episode on polyamory and privilege. And I just wanted to ask, like, it does seem like you have to have a lot of money to go on a cruise or to this resort or something like that. So can you talk a little bit about that? Because there is kind of this idea out there that's being talked about a lot that polyamory is only consisting of white, upper middle class, educated humans. And is that sort of the same idea with swingers, that that is a conception that, that that's what's happening?
I feel like all non-monogamy is expensive.
Sure.
Simply by virtue of you're adding a lot of people and entertaining to your life, which makes things expensive. Like if you had three partners at once, it'd be very expensive, you know?
Yeah.
But desire is very expensive. Absolutely.
I can imagine.
Right.
One of the only reasons I can do it yearly is because I'm a host, you know, so that's different.
Right. Yeah, right.
I would not be attending every year if I was if I had to pay that money.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
But I would say this is true of swinger parties too, and swinger clubs.
Yeah.
Like,
the clubs
there's
especially,
some barrier to entry. Definitely based on like your income.
Right.
It would seem.
Mostly, I think that the clubs and the parties, the barrier to entry is because the people throwing them are taking a financial and legal risk.
Yeah.
Because if they get shut down, they could get sued. They could get all – there are a lot of things. They could get brought up as for prostitution. That's actually a thing that's happened. So part of the reason that it's so expensive is there just aren't many good – I see you all looking at that.
No, I know.
Yeah, now we're all distracted
like
by the really
desire
website. Now you're looking at naked pictures on the website.
It's not even. It's just like a very attractive couple that are not clothed on this website. Sorry,
If you're going to look at websites, you should look at ssdesire.com, which is the swing set desire trip.
Oh, that's your trip. Nice.
But
there goes the rest of the episode.
I think there's a lot to be said about making swinging and polyamory accessible to people who can't afford to spend $100 on an evening out, you know, which is often a swinger party expense. And it's hard to do that. And I know it's something that I'm very conscious of, but I don't see a way to do. We're actually talking about doing a swing set camping trip. There are a few campgrounds in the Midwest that do full nude takeover.
Oh, nice.
Nice.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Though, I mean, the bug problem is going to be interesting.
Yeah, that's true.
But it makes it a little bit more accessible because it's on the, you know, it's in the United States.
Yeah.
It's, you could probably drive there because it's Midwest, you know. Yeah. But even then, it's going to be a couple $100s and there's no real way to get. Like Burning Man, which was supposed to be like the most agrarian thing in the world.
Exactly.
It's still ridiculously expensive and hard to get tickets to.
Yeah, I know there's
been
a lot of conversation around that, particularly this year. I feel like it was the first year that I saw a lot of conversation about how inaccessible Burning Man is.
Oh, for sure.
Which is interesting. And we were talking about this ahead of time and we were thinking about it. We're like, you know, polyamory events also sometimes can cost quite a bit of money. Like if you're going to go to a workshop or if you're going to go to a conference. But maybe, you know, maybe less than the normal swinger party would. But then we're like, well, but I guess you're paying less to just go talk about the thing rather than go do the thing. That we did come up with this question of like, is there something comparable for the swinging community? As in, are there things like discussion groups or like
swinger processing groups.
Yeah, I know. Like these more accessible events that are either super cheap or free.
Just to kind of meet the community rather than to go and have sex at the event.
Yeah.
We're getting there. Okay. You know, I see like the sex geekdom groups popping up all over the country. I mean, that's not swinger related, but it's open and free and sexuality themed. Mm-hmm. You know, I know the Tool Shed in Milwaukee puts on inexpensive classes. The Pleasure Chest in Chicago puts on free classes often.
Yeah, the Pleasure Chest in LA also. Yeah.
There
free classes.
Are ways. It's the swinger community, if you look at the overall community, by and large, they are oddly solitary.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like,
interesting.
You know, we've talked about, I think I talked about with you, poly has lived up front.
Yeah,
you know, you're sure. Basically, if you're committing to a life as polyamorous, you're probably out to a decent level. Right. So because you're out, it's nothing to go to a group event, to meet up at coffee shops with other poly people to process. You don't see that in the swing community because there's still so much stigma attached to swinging and so much fear of being outed because you don't have to be out as a swinger.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Well, I mean, we've also talked about how, you know, part of the polyamory's movement to be more accepted, a lot like the gay rights movement, has been to really downplay the sex aspect of it and to kind of buy into society's sex negative way of looking at things. So yeah, it's definitely true that with swinging, it's like, yeah, it is about the sex.
Yeah,
that's okay. But there is definitely more of a stigma to that. Whereas poly people can make the argument. They're like, oh, it's not about that. It's just about the love and relationships. And, you know, we generally encourage people not to do that too much because, unfortunately, then we're just perpetuating this sex negative cycle.
Yeah. And it'll backfire eventually. Yeah.
Yes, right, definitely. Right. Definitely. Yeah.
And I think we're, I mean, I don't like to compare it to this, but we're seeing similar issues with the trans rights movement following the gay rights movement, because the gay rights movement, we fought for all this land and now you're walking in, or the bi movement to wonder it's
for
sure.
It's much easier. It's terrible, but it's much easier to throw the other communities under the bus to retain your stake in this place.
Yeah.
And the swingers do it to the poly people also. I don't want to make it sound
like... And poly people do it to the swingers.
Yeah, for sure.
So
it's really a case of, my kink is not your kink, and that's not okay. You should feel bad about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, unfortunately, it does tend to go there.
That's it's funny that you say that, because we had Carrie Jenkins on a couple episodes ago, and she's a poly philosopher, and she's queer as well, that she's had people say to her, like, you're ruining gay rights for us.
Yeah, that's crazy.
By being poly and being openly queer. Yeah, which is, it's just...
Yeah, how dare you live your own life?
Yeah, how dare you?
Yeah.
Good.
All right, so I'm going to change topics here a little bit. So on your business card, or at least last time I saw it, one of your lists of titles is a pegging enthusiast.
Yes.
Well, I don't want to give too much away about the book, but there is some pegging that happens.
There is.
Some like first time pegging. I think that's the important thing is like somebody experiencing pegging for the first time, and it's very exciting.
I guess, like, can you just talk about that a little bit?
I think it's
a term that I've found using it. A lot of people are like, huh? What? Until they've been introduced to it.
So is this our segment where we try to increase like pegging awareness?
Pegging 101, go.
Okay, pegging 101. Okay, it's the most oddly specific sex act there is.
Okay.
It requires pretty much completely a man and a woman with a strap on, fucking a man in the ass.
Okay.
And that is the only thing that is pegging.
Because
a woman with a strap on fucking another woman in the ass, that's not pegging.
Oh, you pegged, wait, hang on,
fucking another man? Is there confusion?
Wait, you pegged a guy?
Yes, I have.
What?
Awesome.
Yeah. I haven't gotten to peg a guy.
I thought you knew that.
No, I didn't know that. I'm super jealous.
Well, get on it.
Get on it.
You get on it.
Jeez. I feel like we could work this out right now.
I know, right? Come on.
Now we have a pegging coach on the line.
That's true. Okay, so, all right. So that's what it is. And you were saying that it is somewhat weirdly specific in terms of what actually counts as pegging. Okay, walk us through, like, how would we go about this?
I mean, it feels pretty self-explanatory, if you ask me.
I see. I think that's not necessarily true. He's an enthusiast about it. He probably knows a lot more.
You teach pegging workshops, right?
I do teach pegging.
Wait, workshops. Are there better ways to do it?
Well, here's the deal.
Now we're overthinking.
With pegging, we have to, like everything else we're talking about, we have to overcome stigma.
Okay.
And that stigma is, will I become gay if my partner fucks me in the ass with a strap on?
That's how I became gay.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's how a lot of people became
that's what
gay,
people
apparently.
Think.
So many men
think that. Like, so many men are afraid of even like having a finger because it's like, does this mean that I'm gay?
If I like it. If
you like it, that might, I've had that men might who are, mean.
I've had men who say that like they don't even want to use a bidet because, you know, stuff near the asshole, that seems a little gay. No, like it actually happened.
What?
I know, right?
I mean, using a bidet is closer to gay for many other reasons than that, but you know, it's really sad, and you know, like I can have prostate orgasms, and so that's like multiple gushing orgasms for a woman. I can have an orgasm. My first one lasted 50 minutes.
Wow!
And
wow!
it's a thing that as I explored and more and more and more, I got better and better and better at it. So, like, you know, women who have squirting orgasms will often say that once they start to combine with your other orgasms, and then just like it's an all the time thing, which is true of my prostate orgasms. Once I started having them, now they happen just when I'm being touched, you know. Wow. So it's amazing, and it's something we can do that we don't because we're afraid of it.
Sure. Yeah.
And that's such a shame. Damn. And what I, you know, I like, I talk a lot about how in the womb, we were all one gender. And then labia fused and the ovaries dropped and became balls. The clit enlarged and became a cock. And you know what happened to the G-spot? It became a prostate. And if you feel a G-spot and a prostate at the same time, I've done it. I recommend it. They feel exactly the same. And
yeah.
If we look at that, if they are the same, they produce the same kind of pleasure. And it really gives a lot of, like, what the fuck are you doing to the scientists who claim there isn't a G-spot? Yeah. Because that prostate, it's somewhere in there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But it's all fear, you know. And the other thing is, it's been proven. Well, it's been suggested that prostate massage will help prevent prostate cancer.
Mm. Well,
yeah,
there you go.
No, I've heard that one too. That men who receive anal sex have much lower incidence of prostate cancer than men who don't. Yeah.
Well,
homework.
So I highly recommend pegging. And the reason I call myself an enthusiast is because I'm not an expert. I should not be taken as an expert.
But you have 50-minute long orgasms. How are you not an expert?
That's pretty expert level to me.
That may be pro, but it's not
that's
an expert.
That's pro. Okay, he's in the big leagues.
I can't even imagine what expert level would be then.
Seriously. Wow. Well, I could talk about this all day, but sadly we cannot. Yeah.
I'm afraid we're going to abandon our podcast and just do one on pegging from
now.
Now
it's all going to be pegging, yeah.
Hey, I'll come back for that.
Perfect. Yeah,
perfect. Awesome. Do we?
Yeah. So Cooper, can you let us know or let our listeners know where can they find your book? Where can they find more of your stuff?
Yes, you can find all my stuff at coopersbeckett.com. The book, so it's out today then. Okay.
Yes, comes out today.
Please buy it from coopersbeckett.com as an ebook or paperback, or approachingtheswingularity.com, but it really just goes to the same place.
Okay.
You can also buy it on Amazon and other places, but I'm an independent publisher, so I'd really appreciate it if you bought it from me.
Cool.
Got it.
You can find me, my podcast, Life on the Swing Set, at lifeontheswingset.com, and our Swing Set Network that you guys should be familiar with as an audience of these lovely
right
people
now.
At swingset.fm. I'm on social media, Cooper S. Beckett, pretty much everywhere, but it does get political. So if you don't like that, like if you got really upset about a third of the way into this podcast,
right. They didn't make it to this point if they, wow. All right. Great. Thank you so much for being on the show again, Cooper. We hope to talk to you more soon.
Yeah.
My pleasure. I'd love to come back soon.
Thank you all so much. If you want to find any links to the things that we've talked about in this show, you can find those in the show notes, either in our iTunes listing or at our website, multiamory.com. You can also find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram,
Reddit,
a bunch of other places. Just look for MultiAmory and you'll find us. And if you want to write to us, you can write to info@multiamory.com. And we do read personally. The three of us will read every message that we get, and we respond to them as well. We love actually interacting with our community, hearing what it is that you want to talk about, maybe sharing some info with us that you think we need, all of that. We love getting that kind of feedback from you guys. So thank you all so much, and we'll see you next week.
See you next week.
Bye.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.